Iran's nuclear negotiator in Vienna slams the Europeans for failing to condemn the act of sabotage at the Natanz enrichment facility and imposing new sanctions on Tehran. The Israeli military targets several areas in the Gaza Strip with tank shells and airstrikes. Also ahead, Brazil's Supreme Court confirms the annulment of criminal convictions against former President Lula da Silva, clearing the way for him to run for president next year. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, top story this hour, the signatories of the Iran nuclear deal end another joint commission meeting in Vienna, with talks expected to continue via technical and legal teams. Iran's lead negotiator, Abbas Araghchi, says Tehran is not looking for protracted talks and will end negotiations if no progress is made. Homolezki has the details.
Another joint commission session among the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal ends in Vienna. Political directors decide to mandate two working groups to restart technical discussions and come up with concrete lists of sanctions that need to be lifted by the US and nuclear measures that need to be taken by Iran in order for both sides to come back to full compliance with the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Participants agreed that preparing the list of US sanctions is of particular importance, since nothing can move forward without it.
The current sticking point, number one sticking point, is US to lift its sanctions, all its sanctions, not just the primary sanction against Iran, but also lift all its sanctions of long-term jurisdiction in nature, involving the third party entities and the individuals.
Iran's lead negotiator, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, called the meeting serious and challenging, coming after an attack on Iran's Natanz enrichment facility and Tehran's decision to increase the level of enrichment from 20 to 60%.
We expressed our strong position and our expectation that these acts of sabotage and terror should have been condemned by, you know, European countries and E3.
Iran says it will only come back to full compliance after the US lifts all sanctions and the Islamic Republic carries out a verification process, a demand that, according to media reports up until now, has met US resistance.
We negotiate behind the tables, not through media. The positions taken in the media is something, the real positions on the table is something else.
For the time being, political directors will monitor technical discussions and decide whether the talks need to be extended day by day or whether the sides need to stop talking and go back home. Homolezki, Vienna.
Well, political commentator Bijan Tavassili says the United States pretends to be eager to get back to the JCPOA, but at the same time doesn't make any efforts to make that possible.
Talk is cheap, and if talk is all they are presenting the other side with, then that is not the way to fulfill their campaign promises. They might want to maneuver in a way to pretend that it's not them that are making this round of talks fail, but it is clear to the entire public and the entire world, in fact, that the United States government is not advancing the talks and is not doing enough. That is inexcusable. Europe should have condemned this terror attack and not condone it. It is an incredible attack in the midst of negotiations. Who would believe that the other parties are conducting negotiations in good faith when at the same time you are attacked? This cannot happen again, and there must be clear words spoken against the perpetrators. I think the Europeans know very well who is responsible, in fact, for this act of terror, and they should tell the parties responsible that this will not be tolerated, and in fact that sanctions could be on the table if such an attack were to happen again.
The Yemeni military says its missile force and air force have carried out a joint operation using missiles and drones against a facility belonging to Saudi Arabia's Aramco oil giant and other sensitive targets in the kingdom's southwestern Jizan region. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more.
The Yemeni army said it has launched fresh attacks on Saudi Arabia using 11 missiles and drones against a facility belonging to Saudi Arabia's Aramco oil giant and other sensitive targets in Jizan. It was announced in a tweet by the spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sariya. Sariya said four Samad 3 and Qasif K2 drones were also used in the attacks.
This is a message to Saudi Arabia that it must stop its war and lift its blockade on the Yemeni people. The Saudis must allow the fuel ships to enter Yemen, otherwise the next attacks will be worse for them. We targeted Aramco, which is the backbone of the Saudi Arabia and the global economy. We'll continue attacks and target vital installations.
The spokesman of the Yemeni army said the attack came in retaliation for the latest Saudi crime against civilians in Sada in northern Yemen that killed two children and wounded four others, including a woman. Sariya vowed wider and larger attacks until the war is stopped.
Fuel is one of the main sources of life in the world, and today there is a blockade on Yemen, and oil ships are being prevented from entering the country. Many health centers in Yemen have stopped providing services due to lack of fuel. So the battle is economic, and we will continue targeting Aramco until it stops working. It is our right to fight back.
Yemen's armed forces on Monday launched an attack against Aramco's refineries in Jeddah and Jubail with 10 drones of Samad 3 type and caused a heavy blow to the Saudi economy. The Saudi war has brought about the world's worst humanitarian crisis in Yemen, according to the United Nations.
Yemenis say the army has the right to target Saudi facilities to respond to the crimes committed against Yemeni civilians. They have also made it clear that their attacks against Riyadh will persist until the war is stopped. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Now, the Israeli military has carried out aerial and artillery attacks against targets in the besieged Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Gaza, Asher Shannon, joined us with the latest on the raids.
Israeli tanks shelled farmlands and security posts that belong to Hamas's military wing, the Azim Qassam Brigades, in the east of the enclave, especially east of the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Al-Burej. Israeli fighter jets also attacked areas in the southern Gaza, especially in the eastern part of the southern Gaza Strip, town of Rafah, and also northwest of the central Gaza's Nusrat refugee camps. These attacks resulted in heavy damage to farm areas and also to the security posts in these areas. The Israeli regime claims that these attacks were in response to alleged rocket fire from the Gaza Strip, although no one has claimed responsibility for such attacks. These attacks come as people in Gaza are observing the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
And meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are observing yet another month of Ramadan under tough conditions due to the inhumane Israeli siege. Thousands of Gazan families can't afford to buy food to prepare their Ramadan meals amid the dire economic situation. Ashraf Shannon has more in this report.
The holy fasting month of Ramadan has returned once again, while Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are still under inhumane conditions. This year, Gazans are observing this holy month for the 15th time under the Israeli blockade. Most Muslims throughout the world shop for food items to prepare their iftar meals a few hours before iftar time, which takes place at dusk. In Gaza, meanwhile, people find it very hard to prepare their fast-breaking iftar meals due to the high poverty rates. They mainly blame the crippling blockade for their plight.
The Gaza Strip is going through tough times during the month of Ramadan because of the blockade. The Israeli blockade has made things much worse because we are also going through the coronavirus pandemic. Our economy is also crumbling because of the blockade.
The blockade has destroyed our livelihood, and we hardly afford to buy food to feed our families. My family, like thousands of other families, is relying on food aid to survive these hard times during this holy month.
Shop owners complain of customers' weak purchasing power. They say most people look around and hardly buy anything. The COVID-19 pandemic has only worsened the conditions for the impoverished population.
We're not making any profits during this holy month because people are cash strapped. We've been making discounts to attract customers, but most people are finding it hard to buy their basic needs. The economic conditions are very hard because of a blockade and became only worse amid the pandemic.
United Nations figures show that 80% of Gazans have been relying on handouts in recent years in order to survive. During this holy month of Ramadan, most Gazans are impoverished as their incomes continue to dwindle because of the crippling Israeli blockade.
The Israeli blockade on the Gaza Strip has taken its toll on all aspects of life. People are going through the worst humanitarian situation and their socioeconomic conditions are deteriorating. Palestinians in Gaza are experiencing unprecedented humanitarian conditions during this holy month of Ramadan.
Experts say that the Israeli regime has been fueling misery and suffering in the tiny coastal sliver.
People in the Gaza Strip are observing the holy month of Ramadan under the Israeli blockade. Many here suffer from poverty and unemployment because of Israeli restrictions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Turning elsewhere, Brazil's Supreme Court confirms a decision to annul criminal convictions against former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, allowing him to run for president next year. The ruling said a lower federal court that tried Lula lacked jurisdiction. It does not find Lula innocent, but essentially puts prosecutors back to square one by sending his case to another court. Lula was jailed in 2018 on charges of taking bribes. He spent 18 months in jail before being freed in 2019, pending an appeal. Lula maintains he is innocent and that the case against him was a conspiracy to sideline him politically. He is now considered to be a favorite to run against current President Jair Bolsonaro, who has come under heavy condemnation for his mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic. Meanwhile, Brazil has recorded over 73,000 new COVID-19 infections as the country's hospitals struggle to cope with the worst phase of its outbreak. The Brazilian Health Ministry also registered over 3,500 daily coronavirus deaths. The South American country has confirmed over 13.7 million cases so far and more than 365,000 total deaths. Brazil's hospitals are running out of medicine needed to sedate COVID-19 patients and are also struggling to get enough oxygen. ICU beds are also at or near capacity across the country. Mexico is another badly hit Latin American country. It reported over 4,000 new cases and 401 more fatalities on Thursday. That brings the country's total closer to 2.3 million infections and over 211,000 deaths. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has made an unannounced visit to the Afghan capital, Kabul. The visit comes hours after the U.S. formally announced it would completely withdraw its troops from the West Asian country this year. Amin Alami reports from the Afghan capital.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in an unannounced visit to Afghanistan for talks with Afghan leaders on U.S. decision to withdraw all American troops from the country and end America's longest war.
I'm here to demonstrate our ongoing commitment to the Islamic Republic, to the people of Afghanistan. And we have a partnership that is changing but enduring. And as we've been discussing, as the president has said, we have a new chapter.
During his stay, Blinken met with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and senior Afghan officials, who in their meetings discussed some key issues, including the safe and deliberate withdrawal of U.S. troops as an attempt to move into the next phase of ties between Kabul and Washington. Following Biden's announcement on Wednesday to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan by September 11, NATO said it would withdraw its 7,000 non-American forces in the country within the next few months. The Taliban called for the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, denouncing Washington's announcement. In such circumstances, many have believed that either withdrawal or presence of foreign troops cannot lead the country to peace and stability, because every single player is after its own interest in Afghanistan.
I call on both the Afghan government and the Taliban to honestly think about the misery of the people and make compromise to reach an agreement. They need to stop relying too much on foreign players. This is because no one will care about the fate of our country and our people.
The UK and Australia have also declared to follow the US way and leave Afghanistan with other NATO allies. US invaded Afghanistan under the pretext to launch war on terror, but 20 years on, Afghanistan is still suffering from war and insecurity. As withdrawal of US-led forces from Afghanistan is going to happen, the country's national armed troops say they are capable enough to protect their country. They also enjoy public support for their security role in the war-torn country. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The US president says he is ready to take further action against Russia if, quote, Moscow continues to interfere in the United States. Elaborating on the recent American sanctions imposed on Russia, Joe Biden accused Moscow of interference in the US elections, adding that the measures were a response in kind. Biden said he told Russian President Vladimir Putin in a call earlier in the week that he could have gone further with the sanctions. The US president added that he wanted a stable relationship with Russia, stressing that now is the time to de-escalate. The United Nations says the humanitarian situation in Ethiopia's Tigray region is worsening as people die of hunger. UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs Mark Lowcock said nearly 90% of the region's population is estimated to need emergency food assistance. He added that the number of displaced people has increased to nearly 1.7 million by the end of March. The UN official also noted that sexual violence is on the rise in Tigray and is being used as a weapon of war. Northern Ethiopia has witnessed fighting since November 2020 between Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government and leaders of Tigray, the northernmost region of the country. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration has struck an agreement with Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to temporarily increase border security in an effort to stop migrants from reaching the United States border. The agreement comes as the U.S. saw a record number of unaccompanied children attempting to cross the border with Mexico in March, and the latest number of Border Patrol encounters overall with migrants on the southern border with Mexico, just under 170,000 since March of 2001. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the British newspaper The Guardian. The piece is titled, Biden strikes international deal in bid to stop migrants reaching U.S. border. Stay with us for more. The Biden administration has struck an agreement with Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to temporarily increase border security in an effort to stop migrants from reaching the United States border. The agreement comes as the U.S. saw a record number of unaccompanied children attempting to cross the border in March, and the largest number of Border Patrol encounters overall with migrants on the southern border, just under 170,000 since March of 2001. According to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, Mexico will maintain a deployment of about 10,000 troops, while Guatemala has sent 1,500 police officers and military personnel to its southern border, and Honduras deployed 7,000 police and military to its border to disperse a large contingent of migrants there. Guatemala will also set up 12 checkpoints along the migratory route through the country. Security forces in all three countries have been frequently accused of using excessive violence against migrants and targeting them for extortion and robbery. A White House official said Guatemala and Honduras were deploying troops temporarily in response to a large caravan of migrants that was being organized at the end of March. The Mexican government announced an increase in security and its troop deployment last March. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that the objective is to make it more difficult to make the journey and make crossing the borders more difficult. She added that the agreement was the product of a series of bilateral discussions between U.S. officials and the governments of the Central American nations. The increase in migrants at the border is becoming one of the major challenges confronting Biden in the early months of his first term. Migrants from Central America and Mexico are fleeing rampant corruption, organized crime, as well as hunger caused by failing crops and the impact of climate change. The right to claim asylum is enshrined in international and U.S. laws. Numbers grew sharply during Donald Trump's final year in office, but further accelerated under Joe Biden, who quickly ended many of his predecessors' policies, including one that made the asylum seekers wait in Mexico for court hearings in the United States. Previously, militarized attempts to prevent movement in the region have not reduced the number of people traveling north through Mexico, but instead forced migrants to take riskier routes through remote regions and exposed them to a heightened risk of robbery, rape, abduction, and death. Mexicans represented the largest proportion of people encountered by the U.S. Border Patrol, and nearly all were single adults. Arrivals of people from Honduras and Guatemala were second and third respectively, and more than half of the people from those countries were families or children traveling alone. President Joe Biden is facing an early political and moral test over how his government treats thousands of migrant children who make the dangerous journey to the United States alone. Officials say the number of people caught attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border is on pace to hit its highest number for 20 years. Single adults and families are being expelled under coronavirus safety rules inherited from Donald Trump. But a growing number of children, some of them as young as 6 years old, from Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras are arriving at the southern border of the United States without parents or guardians. These minors are brought to border patrol facilities where many languish in cramped prison-like conditions for days on end. The fast-developing humanitarian emergency shows how Joe Biden's determination to break from Donald Trump's harsh crackdown in favor of a more compassionate approach has collided with the reality of finite resources and a broken system. Democrats have called the situation a challenge and a problem and blamed Donald Trump's legacy. Republicans have rushed to brand it the first crisis and disaster of Joe Biden's presidency. Under Donald Trump, unaccompanied children were sent straight back to Mexico. Joe Biden decided they should go to a Border Patrol facility and within 72 hours be transferred to the health department with a view to being placed with a family member or a sponsor. However, it has quickly become clear that the system is not fit for its purpose, leaving about 4,500 children stuck in facilities designed for adult men. Lawyers who have visited one such facility in Texas describe seeing children sleeping on the floor or on the metal benches and being allowed outside for just a few minutes every few days.
Food for thought.
Salam everybody, and may God accept your fast. Here is a saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, to help us abstain from undesirable acts during blessed month of Ramadan, that may nullify the fast. A fasting person is in a state of worship, even when asleep in bed, except when backbiting a fellow Muslim.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining me and my wonderful guests on today's episode of Back to Reality. In the studio with me, I have the honor and pleasure of having my brothers in faith and humanity join us on today's interesting discussion. To my left, I have the one and only. Salaam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh, Sister Zainab. Again, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure
thank
to be with you.
Thank you for joining us, bro.
My name is Brother Yasser. I am from South Africa.
MashaAllah.
I have been here too long. We hope to benefit.
What are you doing here? Why have you been here for so long?
I've been studying in the Islamic seminary for the last 11 years. I'm just finishing my master's.
May Allah increase your tawfiq and prolong Inshallah. Your life. And to my right, I have my special brother and guest. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us.
This is Ayman Rizvi, and I am actually in the Hawza as well for mm-hmm. about 7 to 8 years.
MashaAllah.
Finishing up my second master's program here.
Today we're going to be discussing a very interesting topic, negotiating with people. I really can't be bothered under normal circumstances. I'm like, this is red. And the other person is like, no, it's blue. And I'm like, yeah, I love blue. Blue's a good color. Blue looks good on this item. It's blue now. Alrighty then, have a nice day. Brother Yasser, you look like the kind of individual who'd have to get himself into a lot of situations where negotiation was required. See that heavy breathing right there? That says a lot. Volumes of books right there.
Like,
intensity intensifies.
Look, for example, right? In life, you have certain negotiation might not be a good word. Like, you come into have a discussion, or you come to a mutable agreement. That's a better word to put.
Oh, let's agree to disagree like that.
Something like that.
Oh, how big a person of you.
Yeah, you see, in that type of sense. Because
how like, often does that happen to you?
In my home, all the time. It's not that. It's like, for example, like at home, alhamdulillah, you know, you have kids and you have your family, your wife, and so on and so forth. So, you know, always the case that, you know, that you and your kids will agree on something, or you and your wife will agree on something. So you have to come to a consensus or a type of middle ground,
yeah,
so to speak, especially in the family. This is very important because obviously the husband is from a certain background, has certain ideas. It's, you know, you're not the same people. Yes, you're living under the same roof.
Yeah, I mean, even with your siblings, you don't feel like that.
Exactly. Like me and my brothers, for example, you know, we have different likes, different dislikes, and so on. So, you know, if he wants to do something, fine, whatever, you know. It's not up to me.
I ain't going to force you.
Exactly. I'm not going to force you to do something. That's with them. Like, but for example, for children and so on, yes, there is a point where you have to kind of discipline and so on. That's different, right? This negotiation or this debate and discussion obviously has
different dimensions depending on who you're talking to.
Are you saying that there are situations where you don't even have to discuss? Especially,
exactly. When your wife tells you something, you don't discuss. You just say, yeah, done it. You go.
You are officially my hero, my role model. The society looks up to you. We need more men like this in the world. It would be a merrier place. You, good sir, deserve an award.
Like, even I remember when I was going back to South Africa once for one of my brother's weddings, because I have a lot of...
How many brothers do you have?
We have five brothers.
Mashallah.
I'm the eldest of five.
Allah, Allah.
So I have a teacher who's, alhamdulillah, may Allah bless him. You know, he helped out a lot in this regard. Because I have a lot of family members who are not Shi'i. They're Muslim, but they're Sunni Muslims.
Cool.
So I would speak to this teacher and he would say, like, look, this is the situation. You know, going back, what do we do? And I realized that, you know, there are so many other things that you can talk about that will not bring up a heated debate. One of the things that he always recommended is, like, don't discuss religion with people who do not want to discuss it.
Absolutely.
Always wait, for example, for them to ask a particular question. Even then, if it's a sensitive question, refrain from answering until you are forced to answer.
Wow.
So it was like the advice that he gave, and it's kind of, you know, focused what you need to do.
And your energy. Good God. Because that could have been such a joyous occasion if you were one of those people who wanted to be like left, right, and center. Oh, no, but that's haram. Oh, no, but that's not how you do it. Oh, no, but your ideology is entirely wrong. You know? You would have ruined the wedding.
Yeah, so... And not only that, there's one of the things that you have, that a holier-than-thou attitude that you might show people.
Mm-mm.
That chases people away from religion as well. You know, you don't want to show that and so on. So this is one of the advice that I was given for one of my teachers. Again, may Allah bless him.
That's awesome.
So, like, and he always mentioned this. Fine. He says, keep religion to the religious venues. For example, you speak Jum'ah,
go all out.
You go on the mimbar, you talk in Haram or in Shah Ramadan, and then, you know, that's the place for your religious discussion.
Yes.
But if they come to that, that's different.
Yeah.
But outside, like in family gathering, let's talk about something else. And don't even have to bring up religion at all.
That was really interesting. Thank you for sharing that with me. Brother, how many times in your life did you feel like I need to negotiate my way out of this?
I think it's, you know, starts from my home.
Guys, but, where do you live?
But, you know, hear me out, first of all.
Okay.
You know, negotiation, what is the definition of negotiation?
Yeah,
you know?
Good question.
If we are negotiating, are we fighting? Are we arguing? Or are we reaching to a logical conclusion? That's the main idea, you know. A negotiation is basically to, you know, talk through reasoning and then reach to the, you know, right conclusion.
That will benefit both parties.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, there are sometimes, you know, my wife wants to do something or sometimes I want to do something and then we discuss each other and then try to reach the conclusion that it's possible or not. Can we do that or not? And then, alhamdulillah, you know, when we talk to each other, we reach to a right conclusion that, you know, this is feasible right now or this is not feasible. It happens the same thing with children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my kid was asking, for example, like for the last 2 years to buy a bicycle. And
don't you just love negotiating with children?
Yeah, of course.
This is a true story. I'm so sorry. This is just for comical relief. Her father asked her. She wanted a top bunk. She wanted like double bunk bed, right? And her father asked her, well, her father told her, you sleep in your own bed for 10 nights. I'm going to get you a double 4 nights pass. And her daddy is like, baby, why aren't you sleeping in your bed? I'm not making this up. She was like, well, dad, I haven't had time yet. This child will go to places. She hasn't had time to sleep in her bed yet. Please.
Yeah,
proceed to tell me your story of negotiating with your children, because that always works.
So this was just the one example. Like one day he asked me, you know, Baba, how can we prove the existence of God?
Oh, baby.
For example, you know. So, I mean, these are different levels of negotiations. You know, you do right from your home. They start right from your home, and you don't even realize that you're negotiating. And for the students of seminary, I think it's an ideal situation. We have to do that for the rest of our lives when we go to Pakistan or anywhere else for the tabligh and for the preaching. So I remember that when I was working for a cellular company in the States, it was very competitive. Like they had five or six different cellular networks, and unfortunately, our company was a franchise company. Mm-hmm. They put all those franchise companies in the one store.
Mm-hmm.
So I was offering all five different companies.
Right, that
and
must
I was
have been
I
hard.
Was selling all of those companies, for example, the services and the cell phone products and everything. So it was really hard for me to talk to the customers because I had to learn about five cellular networks, their products, their services, and then the questions which were being posed, you know, to me that, you know, this is what is good thing about this network, what is bad thing about other network, and this and that. So negotiation, I think it's a again, you know, we need to define that what is negotiation. Sometimes there is negotiation which is peaceful, you know, reaching to the right conclusion, and sometimes there is negotiation which leads to no result. So I think the one negotiation which leads to no result, I think it's a bad one.
The Quran says that Jadl al-Ahsan.
Yeah, exactly.
Jadl,
what does that mean?
Jadl means that it's a debate discussion, but it must be Ahsan. It must reach a good conclusion. Doesn't mean that that person has to accept what you say, but as long as it is respectful, as long as, for example,
and there's acknowledgement.
Like, for example, fine, I agree with what you say, but I still have my reservations, for example.
Yeah.
Or the other person says, fine, you know.
I acknowledge that you think this way,
but don't force your idea on me, for example. That's fine. That's what the Quran says, especially when it comes to like Jadl al-Ahsan and so on.
Have you ever been in a situation where you had to debate, discuss, or negotiate, and you felt like, all right, this person with whom I'm negotiating is attacking me on a personal level now? Right? How do you retaliate? Or do you retaliate at all? How do you deal with that situation?
It's happened a few times, especially on religious discussions.
Right.
Because obviously religion beliefs is something very personal to somebody. If, for example, a personal attack first of all shows the weakness of the other side.
Right.
It shows you don't have the academic or the intellectual capacity to actually debate. It's a weakness. It's straight up because what we call in logic, it's a logical fallacy.
Right.
Because you're not now presenting an argument. You are
right.
Directly attacking the person who's bringing the argument.
Exactly.
Just in order to kind of show people around you and to take their attention away from the actual matter.
And to force yourself the upper hand.
Exactly. And not only that, it's also to bring out a reaction from the opposite side. So at times when that happened, there's also we have the clear Quranic ayah of when someone does that, قُلُوا salama. Say, salamu alayhi wasalam, greet him and leave. Because you know immediately that person has no good intentions.
Dead end, khalas.
There's no intentions there.
Right.
And there are sometimes you don't discuss. I give you a personal example, the demise of Hazrat Abu Talib alayhi salam.
Yeah.
So there was a group of individuals who, there's a majority of Muslims believe that this individual was passed away as a non-Muslim and so on and so forth, na'udhu billah. So I know the argument, and I know that because of the belief in a certain argument, these people will not veer from this belief. But obviously, they asked, and we had to take, what is your belief? I said, look, I know you're not going to change your view or your stance and so on. So what we'll do is we did like a Holy Prophet did a semi-mubahila.
Right.
Now mubahila is a thing where you come and you don't discuss anymore because there's no point for discussion. That was what mubahila was. Mubahila was a time where fine, we've reached a dead end in our discussions. Right. I'm not going to prove anything to you. You're not going to prove anything to me. If we are right, fine. If you are right,
we're done.
Okay. Whatever, right? No, we don't want to go into the whole stuff. So I had a semi-mubahila, right, with these people. I said, fine. We make a dua, me and you. You make a dua. Whoever else wants to wish to join, bismillah. I said, I pray that on the day of judgment, wherever Abu Talib alayhi salam is, I will be with him.
Ya Allah.
And you pray, wherever he is, you'll be on the opposite side.
Perfect.
That's what I said. As you say, Ameen. And we leave it to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the day of judgment. A few accepted, a few rejected outright. So we will not do this. But some did.
Wow. So this was like, this is where you reach the stage, like, exactly. There's no point for discuss anymore.
Right.
And in history, after the obviously the main in Holy Quran with the Christians of Najran, there were certain companions of the Imams who were given permission specifically to do this to a group of people who you could just not speak to them.
Right, but it was still important to prove right from wrong.
Exactly. So because of the other people around, because not only because that person, for example, when the Mubahila comes and Azab comes, you will see that, okay, that person obviously is wrong and that person is right. So it's also for the people around
and
as
for
well.
History, really.
Exactly. So we have Mubahila and so on in that. So this is going in the Islam. So you have Jadl and you have Jadl Ahsan.
That is so hardcore, though. Mubahila. You know, like, okay, so I can't get you to agree with me. See you on Judgment Day, man. I'm so sure of. But that's so beautiful for you to have certainty to that extent regarding your belief system and your worldview, and to be so sure about your argument regarding your ideology.
I'll try that
point.
As well.
Inshallah.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works for, it's not only this, for example, like I had a teacher who did the same thing. Again, they were discussing with an alim who was not Shia. And he said, fine, you know. I said, I pray by the right of Muhammad Ali, Fatima Hassan Hussein. You pray by the right of those people. So this person said, why are you asking about those people? Why you pray for those people? Also pray for me with those people. I said, but why?
People constantly making things complicated. When was the last time, bro, that you reached a dead end in a negotiation? And how did you find yourself out of it?
Well, again, you know, subcontinent. You know, we have the issue of a generation gap, big time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just a very close example, you know, maybe sometimes I and my father, we cannot agree on things. So, you know, there are many instances and examples, you know, we are talking out of logic and reasoning, and they're not listening at all.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this is a dead end.
So you can't do Mubahila there.
And you can't. They've disarmed you in every way. You're like, you know what? Do I go to hell or do I go to hell? What am I supposed to do now?
Exactly. So this is a dead end. And I think here, the only thing you can do is you offer a namaz-e-shab and pray for them. You know, that's the only solution you have. I mean, there's nothing else you can do.
Exactly. And this is a form of ihsan. The Quran tells you, the Quran doesn't tell you to agree with your parents. It doesn't tell you to obey them in a lot of circumstances and situations. It doesn't even tell you to think the way they think, even though they raised you and they formed your thought. It tells you to do ihsan. And sometimes the greatest form of kindness toward our parents is like, Dad, I know you're wrong. I can't prove you're wrong, but I can pray for you. How about that?
Exactly.
And don't tell them that you prayed for them either, because that is going to get you in trouble too. I think that's all the time we have for today's episode of Back to Reality. Thank you so very much for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabbal Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim. يا ربي let the ummah rise again.
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again once again.
The light.
Hello and welcome back to The Light. People in Britain are marking the easing of lockdowns implemented to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Words like freedom, hope, family, reunion and relief have been projected on the walls of the UK's most iconic landmarks, as well as shops and department stores, to show people's feelings. A British company commissioned a survey to find the words that best summed up people's feeling after months of lockdown began to be lifted on Monday. Those celebrating the event say reunion is the word that can best express their feelings.
The most powerful word in there for me is reunion. We've all been apart from each other
friends, loved ones, colleagues, who are also loved ones, I suppose, in some cases, and really looking forward to getting back to my friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time, and imagine a lot of the British public are too.
The event comes as the UK has been the worst hit nation with a pandemic across Europe. The country saw a staggering number of infections and deaths for months. This prompted authorities to impose restrictions in an effort to bring the pandemic under control. Japanese Olympics organizers have unveiled the Games' iconic rings on top of Mount Takara, a popular tourist spot in the west of the Japanese capital, Tokyo. The unveiling of the rings comes as athletes around the world are ramping up training some 100 days ahead of the international event. The sad side of the story, however, is that spectators are barred this time to accompany the organizers to mark and celebrate it. This is because uncertainties still exist over how and even whether or not the Games will take place. A surge of the coronavirus infections, including in Japan, is playing havoc with preparations ahead of the Olympics. Many hope mass vaccinations would help hold the event. Suppose you have run out of milk and you're not in the mood to shop for shopping. This is for you. Robots are lending a hand with grocery shopping in Singapore. A technology company has deployed two robots to a neighborhood for a trial period. Both named Camilo, the machines deliver items from nearby supermarkets and online shops to around 700 households. Designers say people tend to use robots in the pandemic era.
Especially during this pandemic period, everybody is looking at, you know, contactless, humanless, because in the robot itself, it has its own disinfection UVC light that we could do disinfection after every trip is being made by itself.
The robots are equipped with sensors and cameras, and they can carry up to 20 kilograms in their compartment. Users can track the robot on its way using a mobile application. The smart machines make 4 or 5 deliveries per day.
A section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guzhuao Highway is located in Yichuan City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers. Almost 4.5 kilometers of the highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace a traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
Now, a group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Oretherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. On rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million, 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Rio de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of the discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I call it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here, the dazzling Aton. Three main districts, one area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets, pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Habas says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca. The more technology advances, the more robots are seen in more areas of daily life. Now, Chinese engineers have created robotic pets. A Chinese engineering workshop has made a robotic hound called Alpha Dog. It can navigate its way using sensors and artificial intelligence. Alpha Dog can also adapt to its environment using super fast 5G internet. The robotic dog is incredibly stable and has more balance than a real canine. The developers hope their invention can be used to help disabled people, especially the visually impaired.
We are exploring ways of helping the disabled, especially the visual disabled, to live a better life. When the robot dog has the function of vision, hearing and dialogue too, it can easily interact with disabled people and lead them to the supermarket or the bus.
The robotic pet costs $2,400, despite a relatively high price tag. Over 1,800 alpha dogs have been sold.